8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
A very good evening to you, and you are welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, new head for communications at presidency. Is it to streamline government flow of information or for purposes of propaganda? Abudu and Andani Royal Gates share one platform to celebrate this year's Damba in Yendi. How should this unique gesture be nurtured towards lasting peace in Dagban? And bus stop under siege from Trotro and taxi drivers. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories and more. You can also join the discussions by text on 0266-677570. 0266-677570. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Radio Savannah 91.2 in Tamale, Ura Radio 89.5 in Bolgatanga, GBC Kachi FM 95.5, and Unique FM 95.7 in Accra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. You should not see yourselves as Abudis or Andanids, but as a united people who are determined to facilitate peace, development and prosperity. That was an admonition from the Northern Regional Minister Bede Zidin to the Abudu and Andani Royal Gates as he joined them to celebrate the Damba Festival of the People at Dagbon, of the people of Dagbon at Yendi. For decades, there have been chieftaincy conflicts between the two royal gates. Perhaps what might have deepened the crisis was the murder of the Yana more than a decade ago. The people seem to bury their differences, and for the first time in more than 40 years, the Abudu and Andani royal families have come together to mark the annual Damba Festival at Degbewa Palace in Yendi. And Behind the News finds out what is being done to keep the peace that people of Dagbon are enjoying now. And we will be getting in touch with the Northern Regional Minister pretty soon. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra with our story Unity at Damba. We have joining us on the line Emmanuel Bombande, who is the Executive Director of West Africa Network for Peace Building. Good evening, Mr. Bombande, and you are welcome to the program.
Good evening, madam, and my Happy New Year greetings to you all and your team in Ghana Broadcasting, and we appreciate all your work.
Many happy returns. To use as an expert in peace building, what is the significance of the unity that the Andani and Abudu Royal Gates exhibited of this year's Damba Festival?
Madam, let me say that what we all saw should gladden our hearts and should give us the type of cautious optimism that the process of healing in Dagbon has begun, and that regardless of the difficulties that we have come from, and the tragedy that we've had to deal with, particularly the people of the Dagbon traditional area, the fact that for the first time we see the royal gates of the Andani and the Abudu sit together to celebrate Damba, which also a manifestation of their sense of unity and the expression of what they share in common, which is the great faith in Islam, we can look at all that and say, it's a very good signal. It's a very good sign. But I also want to be the first to add in a very modest way that let us not celebrate it yet as the restoration of peace on the basis of the reconciliation of Dagon. We should only appreciate it as a signal that can now, in my view, be nurtured and continue to be supported so that the trust building can return, the confidence amongst the two royal gates can return, and as a result of all that, any outstanding issue that now needs to be dealt with for the full restoration of peace based on the social reconciliation of all the people of Dagon now can become fully, in my view, appreciated and supported by the rest of Ghana.
But for now, can we really say it's a sign that peace has finally returned to Dagon?
No, that's why I'm talking the way I'm doing, that we should not be in a rush to celebrate it the way you just put it, for a very simple reason. Peace is a process. The search for peace is a process. In that process, you are looking at how you are rebuilding trust. Particularly if you look at the context of the type of violence and the type of damage it did directly to the heart of the Dagon kingdom. It is no one else we are talking about, but you are talking about what it did directly to the Yana and his elders. And it will be too much to begin to say that no, just because we saw the royal gates of Andani and Abu sit together in the Damba festival, peace has been finally restored. Madam, don't forget that the roadmap, which was a mutual outcome of the Manchia process, is not fully completed precisely because there were certain outstanding issues that have not been dealt with. And that is why I prefer to say that it's not that peace has been completely restored, but that the healing and the trust building that can now lead to the restoration of peace has begun. It's now how that is supported and nurtured that can bring us to the conclusion of this restoration of peace.
Well, but Mr. Bombande, what are the existing challenges that must be addressed to resolve the conflict?
Let me put it this way. From a peace-building perspective, I have always thought that the process of dialogue was happening in a context where wounds have not healed and where emotions were still very high and where even the construction of language that reminds people of their belongingness together and sense of common identity was very difficult to construct precisely because there were victims who felt that their wounds were still fresh, and yet the process of trying to heal that wound was, in my view, not the appropriate one. And so when the process of Manchia was now leading to the roadmap, it was okay to sit down and talk. But once it now got to the implementation of the roadmap, some of the actions that needed to be undertaken were, if you would call it, rehashing that wound. And it did not matter anymore whether it was Andani's or Abudu's, but both of them, from their perspective, found it difficult to deal with the complexity of how the implementation of those actions can restore peace. That is why now, if the journey for healing has started, it now makes it easy in dialogue to talk about those outstanding issues and how the two royal gates can work together and cooperate in the implementation of those decisions. I have not been specific, but very concretely, you cannot celebrate, for example, certain funerals, or you cannot unskin some of the vacant skins that need to be properly done with all the traditional aspects that now restores the traditional kingdom to its appropriate status of how the kings and sub-chiefs are all in place, when that mutual trust and how to do that is not prevailing. And that is why this healing, when nurtured, supported, now creates the environment for that to happen. Before then, we begin to talk about those actions that the roadmap suggested and how then they are implemented, and how the full restoration of unity and peace in Dagon becomes real.
Well, Mr. Bomani, I'll indulge you to hold the line for me. Joining us on the line also is Dr. Henry Seydi Dana, who is the Minister for Chieftaincy and Traditional Affairs. Doc, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I guess you are happy that people of Dagon united in celebrating the Damba Festival for the first time in more than 40 years.
Yes, well, this is very good news. And I was listening to Mr. Bomandi, and I share some of the views he has expressed. Let us not rush. Let us be humble. It's a process. And we are all happy about this. And for me, as the Minister for Chieftaincy and Traditional Affairs, what we have to do, and for that matter, government has to, is to take opportunity of this very healthy wind blowing to create the next environment. For instance, I was in on a Manoving outreach when I took over as Minister for Chieftaincy and Traditional Affairs. One of the things I put in place is to time to time go around the traditional areas. You cannot rely wholly on reports in Accra. And so when you go around, there are things at first hand you get to know for yourself. So I started with the Volta region, and the second region was Northern region. And so I was in Tamale, I was in Damango, I was in Nagarigo, and I was in Yendi. And I think that what government we can do now is to create the necessary environment to facilitate this process. For instance, I did indicate in Yendi that my ministry would try to form the Dagon Traditional Council, which for a very long time hasn't been meeting. In fact, you have only one registrar from the region who is now taking care of the whole Dagon. So we are going to support them with more traditional council staff.
Mm.
And then also, I'm told the traditional council buildings is leaking because of disuse for a very long time. So we'll quickly work, and then I'm in touch with the regional minister and the about six district assembly areas within Dagon to get this the traditional council buildings resuscitated. You know, that in this way we are also providing the healthy environment for this good wind blowing. And I'm having envision during the course of this year, after having that data, it should be possible to have initially, you know, to promote the spirit, you know. And I wouldn't mind as a Minister of Chieftaincy attending, just to push and then facilitate and then encourage, you know, the process. And what we have to bear in mind that Dagon is not just a kingdom of now. Dagon has been in existence since the 14th century when you had Mansa Musa. It's one of the oldest kingdoms in Africa. And so to have healthy development is good for chieftaincy, you know, good for Ghana.
So, Doc, what message do you have for the people of Dagon as we begin the year in a positive note?
I think that let us not be satisfied. Let us not be too, just rush to be listened. Let us work harder, you know, all the stakeholders. And I did mention last time I was on air that a sudden healthy wind is started to blow in Ghana in chieftaincy. On the 12th of December, the traditional area of Sandoma in the Upper East region got in a paramount chief after so many years of, you know, disputing. That was a healthy development. Now, we had the reunification DEPA in Akwatem, which I did attend with the Honorable Minister for Eastern Region, and bringing together the Nifa, the Benkum, you know, the Kapine, and it was a very, very lively occasion. These are the sort of things Ghana needs, you know, getting together, compromise, unity. That is what we need now. And if we are able to get that one together, if we are able to get this process, you know, to a high degree of recommendable peace. I think that will be one of the best things we can get for this generation.
But beyond Dagbon, there are other chieftaincy districts dotted around the country. What initiatives have your ministry taken to have some of these crises addressed?
Yeah, yes. One of the things is that when I took over as Minister for Chieftaincy, so one of the biggest problems was council for the regional and national houses. For some reason, it has not been easy to get lawyers to, be interested to work with Nananom. Well, some of us have done it over the years, but many have not. And when the council retired for the National House, we have not had council. But due to the pressures, what we have done is that together with the Honorable Minister for the Justice, the Attorney General, we've got a state attorney to render service to the National House of Chiefs until such time that we have a permanent council. And so with this arrangement, I'm hoping that very, very sensitive chieftaincy matters pending before the National Assembly. For instance, Bimbila. And then you have in Swatre, in the Brahafo, which is also causing, some concerns. I mean, there are a few of them that the National House can deal with. And I believe with this arrangement, we should see some action to get these cases disposed of in not too long future. And then, of course, we have others like Anglong, which is one of the very important traditional areas, particularly in the Volta Region Chieftaincy. I did indicate when I went visited the regional house that all stakeholders should work. We should all work on board to get a change in the tide, to have the Omafia to occupy a seat in the Volta Region House of Chiefs. And these are a few that I think we have our attention on. Disputes are all over in Africa where you practice chieftaincy. But when you have a situation that very important key traditional seats are vacant, then it's a source of worry. And that's why I think that with what has happened in Akwapim, with what has happened in Sanduma, and with what is happening in Dagbon and Wa, these are all areas that we are working. But you work across the clock behind the scenes to stop chieftaincy. It's not everything that you go on air to start, claiming success when the success is not really where you want it to be. Otherwise, we are doing a lot, and I think that come December next this year, we should have really got to a point that His Excellency's vision, which is to get a chieftaincy administration that would make the institution to contribute to speedy economic development. I think that's where we are pushing towards, and I think we are getting there. And without peace, without harmony in the traditional areas, you cannot realize that economic development. And that's why it's very key to government that we get some of these disputes, if not completely resolved, at least reduced to the barest minimum.
Very well. Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. Henry Seydey Dana is the Minister for Chieftaincy and Traditional Affairs. And coming back to you, Mr. Bombande, talking about the Andani and Abudu Royal Gates exhibiting unity at this year's Damba Festival, what really could have worked the trick for them after so many years?
Madam, I'm aware that there has been very quiet behind the scene, out of the media effort in the northern region with the support of various leaders, including political leaders. The president had made statements to the effect that he wants to do everything possible to bring about reconciliation in Dagbon. Those behind the scene maneuvering and support and persuasion must have definitely contributed to this. But now that is a significant first step is publicly appreciated. I think what we can pick from the Honorable Minister for Chieftaincy is how to support what we are seeing now in a way that allows progress to be sustained, rather than withdrawing and allowing this to fall apart, and then we only now begin to talk again about what should have happened in Dagbon. So that for me is the issue. and that how we sustain these processes sometimes is our challenge, that we are not very good at sustaining it and ensuring that we keep to that process so that at the end of the day, we can see and appreciate the results.
But looking at the situation on the ground, can we return to the period before the murder of the Yana where Dagbon was relatively peaceful?
Madam, I can tell you without any hesitation that yes. Because you see, the character and nature of conflict is that sometimes it can even create new opportunities for deeper relationships. It's like a man and his wife, or a woman and her husband, who had a problem that was deep. But once they were able to discover, the two of them, what actually went wrong, and recommitted themselves in that marriage to let it work, their love for one another even increases much deeper than before they even had that dispute. I can take that example and put it in the context of Dagmar and say that even if you look at the pictures and the way they were sitting together in state with the regent and how that ambiance could be appreciated from where we saw the dark days, there's no doubt in my mind that if well-nurtured, the unity and sense of purpose in Dagmar could even be much closer than they were before the unfortunate tragedy of 2002.
Well, we've talked about the actors who've helped in bringing this peace process, but what are your expectations of the Andanis and Abudis themselves in bringing about peace in Dagbon?
First of all, I continue to argue that nobody can replace those who feel the conflict in terms of what it did to them in bringing about peace. Anybody who is helping can support, encourage, and nurture. But at the end of the day, peace in Dagmar begins with the two royal families, the Abudu and the Andani, and all the people of Dagmar for that matter. The trick now is to focus on that process without allowing the distractions that sometimes come into the process as a result of other undercurrents, which now makes it difficult for that process to continue to unfold. That is one. My second expectation is that when people have a conflict or whatever tragedy might have resulted in dividing a people, what they expect in that conflict or in that tragedy is the overwhelming support of everybody. And so though they are the ones who can bring about the peace, we must support and encourage them. And the state has an important role to play in the mediation that can happen, even if not directly as the state, but through the type of institutions that have been set up, like the Committee of Eminent Kings. Now, if you do not support this committee to do its work to the fullest, or you do not create the environment that can nurture this process, it is no longer because the people of Dagmar cannot find peace, but it's because we have taken it for granted that once security has been restored, it equals to peace. But that is not peace. Yes, there is relative peace in the sense that there is no threat to personal lives and property. But we want a reconciliatory process that brings a type of peace in which everybody feels confident. Now, civil society can only do as much as they can do, but civil society can never replace the important role of the state. So that is why the Honorable Regional Minister and all the work that he has been doing must be appreciated. How can he be supported from central government for these processes to unfold? And let me quickly end here by saying it is much cheaper if you put all the amount of money to transport the elders to Manchia for their dialogue, or for that matter, to promote said dialogue in the northern region itself. It is much, much cheaper than the amount of money you need to keep the peace through the enforcement of the peace. So we are better off supporting and nurturing the process of dialogue. Not only is it cheaper, but it is the best approach because it will produce the best results, and we will now be all happy that we restore peace in Dagmar than to keep away and see only the type of violence that requires now the enforcement of peace, which is much more expensive and sometimes comes with unintended consequences that even creates more problems.
Well, Mr. Bombande, I undoubt you to hold the line again from you. We'll come back to OneNet's report on the human security for the last quarter of 2013. But joining us on the line is Bid Zidin, who is the Northern Regional Minister. Good evening, Senya. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Well, how relieved is the Regional Security Council to see the Abudu and Dandani royal families coming together to mark this year's Damba Festival in Yendi?
Very much so, because that is what we have been working at all this while. But of course, it is also based on the vision of His Excellency President John Dramani Mahama, a vision in which he has indicated that he wants to ensure that he resolves the Dagbon conflict and bring about peace in Dagbon. He wants to resolve the Boku conflict and bring about peace in these areas, because without peace, it is difficult for these areas to achieve development. And he wants to bring prosperity to these areas. So, by his vision, I as regional minister, and of course, with my deputy, what we have to do is to ensure that we work assiduously towards the achievement of this particular vision. And we cannot do it alone. We have to go along with the Regional Security Council, and that is how we have operated all along.
But would you say what you witnessed at the Biwa Palace was a true reflection of the commitment of the two gates for peaceful coexistence?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, we cannot have absolute acceptance in terms of the Abudus and then the Andanis, because there are certainly some Andanis who may not even be happy with what is happening, just like there will be some Abudus who may not be happy with what is happening. But I can say for sure that the main actors in the Dagbon conflict were involved in this process, and that is how come that it was possible to arrive at where we arrived at. You will recall that about 2 weeks ago, the Regional Security Council indeed invited members of the Abudu Gate and members of the Andani Gate to a discussion table in Tamale, and they were duly represented, and they came and we had discussions. And based on those discussions, we issued a communique in which all the parties agreed that henceforth we are going to celebrate Damba at the Biwa Palace, and they were committed to it. Of course, there were a few hiccups, but ultimately, I think that good sense prevails, and that is how come that we're able to celebrate Damba at the Biwa Palace, and we had the Abudus and then the Andanis. The Abudus are led, indeed, the Abudus are led, are always led in their discussions by the Bambin Lana and the Nantona, the Sunsun Lana, and then the Tolona. But for now, you know, we don't have a certain Tolona. We have got a regent. But the regent and his team were also involved, and they sent a delegation to come and participate in the Damba. So what I will say is that the main actors were involved and the main actors were present at Damba. It is true. I know that a skeptic will say that, oh, but the Bolelana was not involved. Yes, the Bolelana did not attend Damba, but I can assure everyone that the Abudus were adequately represented at the Damba celebration. Yes, the Bolelana had indicated his reservations about certain things, and those reservations were such that they could not be accommodated this time round. I'm sure that in future, it is still possible to build upon this one and then ensure that those reservations probably are catered for in the future.
Well, so the Regional Security Council, I know, is not relenting to ensure Dabon continue to enjoy peace, but what processes do you have in place in this regard so that it will not be seen as mere cosmetic?
Far from being mere cosmetic, I've listened to my brother, Emmanuel Bombardi. I've also listened to the Minister for Chieftaincy Affairs. And I can assure you, it is not everything that you can make public. It is not possible to make everything public. But I can assure you that there are many things that we are doing behind the scenes. And I can also assure you that there is enough goodwill to sustain what we have done. Indeed, I can confidently say that the Abudus are satisfied with development so far, just as the Andanis are satisfied with the development so far. You know, let me tell you something. It was a real rare situation to see the Bambilana who let the Abudus dance the Damba, not just attend the Damba, he danced it. And the Sonsonlana danced Damba, not just they attended, they danced. That goes beyond just mere participation. They must have been convinced beyond every outer of doubt that what they are in for is intended to be sustainable and it is intended to achieve permanent peace in Dagbon. I have no doubt in my mind that they really mean well, and that based on that, we can move forward.
Mr. Zidane, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Bid Zidane is a Northern Regional Minister. And Mr. Bombane, thanks for staying there on the line. And talking about Bwana's Human Security Report for the last quarter of 2013, what were some of the highlights?
Madam, thank you so much. I would be very happy to share some of the highlights. But the highlights in themselves, as it has been distributed to the media, constitutes a problem. And that's why I want to be the first, as the first responsible of ONEP, as the executive director, to apologize to the people of Ghana for this poor quality report that was issued by our national network today, without subjecting it to the rigorous review and peer review and quality control that is necessary. The reason I say that is very simple. Every day we gather data. So in every 3 months, the data accumulates into the quarter's data. We now put that data across specific indicators that we develop. For example, homicide, murder, physical assaults, demonstrations, disease outbreak, human trafficking. We look at, in each region, how many of these occurred, and these are about 12 in total. We then use that data to do an analysis of the human security situation in Ghana. Now, our former coordinator responsible for this left, and we had a new coordinator, and we still have to do rigorous training for our new coordinator. So I don't want to blame him entirely, but this report appears to be on the basis of assumptions that are qualitative rather than looking at the quantitative data and doing a good analysis. So that's why I first of all apologize for the poor report, and we have issued a press statement this evening to correct this. But having made this observation, you asked me to look at the highlights. My summary in total is that if you look at the last quarter, there is no doubt that we are confronted with challenges in which we can see an increase in, for example, in some regions, the number of incidences of armed attacks and armed robbery. And so if you look at that data, the challenge always is that despite the visibility of the police and the performance of the police, we are still confronted with those challenges. Some of those challenges in the data have been attributed to 4 people who were attacked in their homes and
they lost their lives in the process of robbery. But we also look at the response of the state. Now, the fact that though these incidences happened and they were alarming, we saw the police succeed in their investigations to arrest the perpetrators and to bring them before court. We know that the state is responding, even if the number of the incidences have also increased. And so that leads us to conclude that in Ghana, the peace and stability we enjoy must never be taken for granted, and that we continue to work hard at this so that we can sustain this stability and the peace that is the foundation pillar for everything else that we want to do.
So how soon are we going to see a more qualitative report?
By the end of the next quarter report will come at the end of March.
Genuine.
And we are going to intensify the capacity building of how these reports are written so that they have the quality that they deserve and do not necessarily result in the consequences of anxiety and fear, because they are actually reports to prepare us as an early warning to deal with what we must deal with, rather than point to gloom as if to say that the country is about to sink, because that's not the purpose. It's not to alarm, but it is to warn us on what we must do to avert and mitigate the social tensions and the violence.
Well.
And that is why I characterize it the way I have done.
Mr. Bombande, we are very grateful for your time with us tonight. Emmanuel Bombande is Executive Director of West African Network for Peace Building. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Why does government need a communications advisor now when there are a number of people who speak on government issues at the presidency? How true is it that communications advisor is to manage its propaganda machinery? These are the questions boggling the minds of Ghanaians following the appointment of Ben Dechemalo, a senior communications advisor and head of communications. Mr. Malo was communications advisor to the president of the 66th session of the UN General Assembly and served for 2 years from September 2006 with the UN mission in Liberia, a spokesperson and deputy chief public information. So what role will Mr. Malo be playing at the presidency? Behind the News finds out, and Mutala Mohammed is a deputy minister of information and media relations. Good evening, Mr. Mohammed, and you're welcome to the program.
Thank you, and good evening to your cherished listeners.
So, Mr. Mohammed, why head of communications at the presidency?
Well, I think that we, all the successive governments or presidents in this country have listened.
And Mr. Mohammed, could you raise your voice a bit?
That all the successive presidents, at least from President Kufuor, President Meles, they've all had communication bureau within the presidency. I have heard people who say that the appointment of the communication director at the presidency is more or less going to conflict with the work of the ministries of information and media relations. My simple response to that is that that can't be the case. We have been working with the gentleman before this appointment was made public, or before the appointment was issued and it was announced to the good people of this country. The work of the Minister of Information, you know, goes beyond just the presidency. The work of the Minister of Information is not limited to the presidency. It includes other ministries and agencies, and indeed the general public. Departments and agencies are all, information that is going to them and coming out. The coordination of such information is the responsibility of the Ministries of Information and Media Relations. Now, if they appoint someone as communication director, that person's responsibility is limited to the presidency. Indeed, he would also have the opportunity to communicate to the Ghanaian people from the presidency and also get information from the Ghanaian people to the presidency. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
But to a very large extent, there is just a complementary work. And as far as we are concerned, you know, he has enormous experiences. He is very capable.
He has worked not only with Ban Ki-moon and the UN, and also he has worked extensively with the BBC within the Focus on Africa and other, you know, departments under the BBC. So he has enormous experiences, and these experiences are certainly going to be brought to bear. What we think is that, and what is going to be the issue, that he being appointed and going to coordinate the activities of information within the presidency would lead to effectiveness, efficiency, and also complementarism that would indeed give the good people of this country the needed information as they want, and also get the needed information to the president.
So
in simple terms, his work is limited, if you like, to the presidency. But the Ministry of Information work goes beyond the presidency. The Ministry of Information work, in fact, is within the president's other agencies and ministries. And mind you, the minister was indeed appointed and vetted by parliament. But Mr. Duque's appointment is not going to be subjected to any parliamentary vetting or approval. This is something that is going to, his work is going to be within the presidency and the kind of conditions that already will take place within the presidency. And like I said, we have had tremendous relationship with him. We have been working with him, you know, on in the quiet. And now that this thing has been made public, it's just a matter of getting someone to head that bureau that has been existing for some time.
Well, so how will he ensure uniformity at the presidency when it comes to information flow vis-a-vis the Information and Media Relations Ministry and that of his job?
Like I told you, as I talk to you now, he's with the president, you know, he went with the president to the first travel that he had, and now he's with the president in Switzerland. You know, he traveled with the president because my boss, the minister, was too much engaged. I was too much engaged. My colleague was too much engaged. I have listened to people who also argued that we don't need so many or more than one deputy minister at the Ministry of Information. I've also listened to people who say that we don't even need the Ministry of Information. My simple response to them is that as I talk to you, my colleague is also on another platform talking to another journalist on a different media house, because we have a responsibility to communicate to the people of this country government policies, interventions that inure to the benefit of the Ghanaian people. It is not a matter of choice. It is a matter of responsibility that at any point in time we need to provide the good people of this country with the needed information they want as far as governance of this country is concerned. So his work is certainly not going to conflict any work at the Ministry of Information. And like I indicated earlier, we have been working with him for some time now. And I tell you that we have an excellent working relationship with him that has also helped to coordinate the activities within the ministry. You know, if you listen to Honorable Ayaraga on a sister radio station today, he stated palpably that, look, I am not a trained journalist. I am a politician, and I'm a lawyer by profession. My colleague, Honorable Felix, is not a trained journalist. In fact, my colleague, Honorable Felix, indeed, is a background of oil and gas. I am not a trained journalist. My background is, you can call me a teacher or a development planner or an international relations student or a psychology student. You don't call me in that perspective.
So
to that extent that we are appointed at the Ministries of Information, if they are now getting somebody who has vast experiences on the issue of communication, issues of information, I think that would indeed help to deliver effectively and efficiently. The fact that we all bring to bear our background, which will certainly be coordinated by someone who is an experienced journalist, who is a trained journalist by profession, and I think that can give the people of this country the needed kind of information that they want.
Well, Mr. Mohammed, I endorse you to hold the line for me. Sulemana Brahma is the Deputy Executive Director, Media Foundation for West African Journalists on the line. Good evening, Mr. Brahma. You are welcome to the program.
Good evening, Agatha, and thank you for having me.
Well, Mr. Brahma, do we need a communications specialist when we have a Ministry for Information and Media Relations?
Well, thank you very much. I think when it comes to whether or not the presidency or the government needs communication specialists, the answer is yes. I think it is the practice, you know, around the world. If you take the US government, you know, under President Obama, you know, you've had, now you have Jay Carney serving as the press secretary, but when you read their roles and responsibilities, essentially what they do is to make sure that government information and other assignments of the government, activities of the president, and so on and so forth are made known. And of course, the position of government on various issues locally and internationally are made known to the media. It's the same in the UK, it's the same almost everywhere that you have democracy existing. I think the practice exists. And therefore, yes, it is the case that we need, or the presidency, the government for that matter, needs a communication specialist to direct the affairs of communication between the government and the people or the citizenry. I think that, and then the other question, of course, is, well, so the person appointed, is he qualified? Does he have the necessary experience? And that one, too, the answer definitely is yes. If you read the profile of Ben, and we some of us listened to him when he was at the BBC, and of course, we some of us, you know, have followed him. I mean, his work at the UN, serving as spokesperson for high-level, top-level diplomats, sometimes even including the UN Secretary General himself. But I think the real challenge is what the Honorable Murtala was trying to deal with. You know, people have raised the issue of multiplicity of persons performing the same function. If you read the Ministry of Information website and what the ministry is supposed to be doing, essentially the mission of the ministry is to facilitate two-way free flow of information, reliable and timely information between the government and the various publics, or government and its various publics. Now, under the same ministry, you have the Information Services Department. The ministry describes the Information Services Department as the operational unit of the ministry, which is mandated to be the main public relations outfit for government. And one of the things, or some of the things that the Information Services Department is supposed to be doing, is offer public relations support to the ministries, departments, agencies, as well as our diplomatic missions abroad. Now, if we have a ministry with a minister and two deputies, and their role is to make sure that there is free flow of timely, reliable information between government and the people of Ghana, and then you have a PR agency under that ministry that is supporting the department, agencies, ministries, and our diplomatic missions, then that is why I think it is legitimate for people to say, do we then need another communications person, a top-level official at the presidency? Because you already have an agency, an institution that is supposed to be facilitating communication or information flow between the government and its people. Now, the other thing I think is what, again, Honorable Murtala was talking about, which is the expertise and the skills of the persons who are appointed to those roles that are supposed to be functioning in a way that allows for information flow between government and its people. And I think that from Honorable Murtala's submission, one can then conclude that in appointing persons to the Ministry of Information, perhaps, the right caliber, you know, this is not to say that the people there are incompetent, but of course, I think he would admit that based on their experience and their backgrounds, perhaps they were not the right people to be appointed for that ministry that is supposed to be performing the role that he, as he said, requires somebody with media background, with journalism, and with communication expertise. And I think these are really the issues that make the highly skilled and competent Ben Doche Malo's appointment quite controversial, debatable, and eliciting all the various arguments that are going on.
Well, Mr. Sulemana Brahima, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Sulemana Brahima is Deputy Executive Director, Media Foundation for West Africa. And coming back to you, Mr. Mohammed, so would the number of government communicators now reduce?
Well, first and foremost, let me quickly respond to some of the issues you raised. And effectively, you look at the ISD department, their work is not just to the presidency. They are found in every single district. So he himself has indicated that it's an information two-pronged flow.
It comes in and goes out. So at any point in time, government would want to be abreast with the kind of information that happens in Hamlet, that happens in Kita, that happens in Denchila, and any other parts of the country. And this information can only be gotten through the Information Services Department. Then one would ask a question, that then if you have media houses now based around the country, then one would say that then we don't need the media, the Information Services Department. The simple response is that it's not just about giving information, but giving adequate quality and timely information. It is also significant to state, and because he raised that issue. Now, if you look at the background of the individual, it would be absolutely strange for someone to suggest that appointing a minister of information, you must appoint someone who is a trained journalist. You get it completely wrong. The information that comes out of the presidency or government to the Ghanaian public, and information isn't that comes from the Ghanaian public or the Ghanaian people to government, is not information that is absolutely on media. It is an information that sometimes is legal. If you have a trained journalist who doesn't have a legal background, he can't do anything. It's information that borders on developmental issues. And clearly, I'm a development planner by profession. You have information that borders on even teaching. I'm a teacher. You have information that borders on the economy and oil. You have my colleague whose background is on oil and gas. So to that extent, if you look at the previous ministers of information who have been appointed, they are getting people who have backgrounds in diverse areas.
Mm.
Now, if you just say that you need to have a journalist, you need to have a trained journalist. A trained journalist who knows nothing about oil and gas, a trained journalist who has little information about the economy, a trained journalist who is not a lawyer, certainly he can't manage the kind of information that you want to manage. The information you are managing is not only the quality information, quantity information. You are also looking at the quality information.
Exactly.
And quality here, you are looking at the kind of information that you actually give out to people. And in fact, you can have a trained journalist who certainly would have the information all right, but he cannot properly inform and lay this information to the Ghanaian public.
Very well. So it's not likely that the number of communicators at the presidency will reduce.
In fact, if you look at the kind of work the Minister of Information is doing, I think that people would even suggest that we should have several deputies or ministers manning this ministry. And I'll give you a classical example. Every media house has a time that they have their news. Those who listen to your radio station, which is widely listened to, I believe, no other radio station is listened to than GBC across the country because it is found everywhere.
Right.
Another radio station, let's say Peace FM, Joy FM, Radio Gold. Then you have people who listen to those radio stations. You all give your news at 7 o'clock. Now, those who listen to particular radio stations or TV stations, they would want to get information from government and what government is doing. Now, you have two deputies and one minister. The minister is talking on one radio station, another deputy is talking on another radio station, and one deputy is talking on another radio station. What of the other radio stations who would not have the opportunity to hear the needed information and
get
information from
very well.
So I think that it's significant we'll look at it in that perspective.
We want to thank you for your time with us. Mutala Mohammed is the Deputy Minister of Information and Media Relations. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It is an obvious sight every passing day for road users in Accra, but make no mistake about the congestion and worsening traffic situation caused by unauthorized lorry parks in Accra. The Motor Traffic and Transport Department of the Ghana Police Service has identified turning of bus stops into illegal trotro and taxi stations, for instance, as a contributory factor for the unnecessary congestions on the roads. Now we go to the phone lines, and joining us now is Numo Blafo, who is the PRO of the Accra Metropolitan Assembly. Numo, good evening. You are welcome to the program. Hello, Numo Blafo. Can you hear me? Well, it appears Numo isn't on the line, but it's unfortunate we are not able to get in touch with DSP Alexander Obing, who is Director of the Research, Education and Training of the Motor Traffic and Transport Department, to speak to the issue. Let's quickly read some of your text messages. And Abubakar Balogu Nyendi says, we the children of Dagbon don't know our tradition anymore. We are missing our tradition and culture with time. And Ubidam Isaac from Kintampo says, congratulations to the local Black Stars on winning the match. Also to the citizens of Dagbon for celebrating Damba Festival peacefully. And Commander aka Kamvulina in Newtown says, I'm very happy with the unity in Dagbon. God bless all Dagombes. And Nyelela Aziz in Washington, thank God the Andani and Abudu celebrated this year's Damba Festival together. We are one people with a common destiny. Let's remember that peace should be paramount. And Awal Yendi says, the roadmap must work for people of Dagbon. Things that we hear is not what we are seeing. We want the truth. And I understand Numo Blafo is back on the line. Numo, good evening. You're welcome to the program.
Good evening. Thank you.
Well, Numo, what have been identified by the AMA as causing the congestion and worsening traffic in the metropolis?
Well, there are many factors that the assembly identified as contributing to the traffic congestion in the metropolis. Some are, for example, our traders who have taken over the pavement. Others are the truck drivers and then taxi drivers who have taken the shoulders of the road to be either their parking places or their loading basis and all that. So many factors, in short, contribute to the traffic congestion within the metropolis. And if you recall, before the Xmas holidays, we launched a program codenamed the Operation Let the Traffic Flow. Certain roads were turned to one way. We had to put these poly plus blocks on certain roads actually to prevent drivers from entering the flow of traffic at unauthorized areas, and we had to actually create spaces for them to be able to park. You see, most of the problems that we've been having also when getting to bus stops, you see that when these commercial vehicles come to park, either to offload their people or pick up people, the next vehicle that comes, instead of parking behind, it will just park by the side of it. So before you realize, a 2 or 3 lane road or 3 or 4 lane road could be reduced to either 2 lanes or 1 lane. And these have been a major headache that causes the traffic congestion on our road.
So how are you, the AMA, collaborating with the police to find solutions to taxis and trotro users turning bus stops into stations?
See, the issue is that the mayor, that is the Metro Chief Executive, is the chairman of the MESEC. So this operation, Let the Traffic Flow, I'm talking about, was something that was taken up or was discussed at the MESEC level, and all the members agreed to it before we embarked on these activities. We had a lot of cooperation with the MTTU and other stakeholders because, you see, the traffic was actually managed. In short, you get to certain traffic lights, it will be red for certain people certain motorists, but they will be allowed to move because there is a lot of traffic on that lane, and maybe where it is being expected that they are having a green, there will be a few vehicles or maybe no vehicles at all. So those that have been stopped by the red light, the police will actually allow them to go. So these are some of the measures we took to ease the traffic congestion. And also, the bollocks that we placed on the roads, on the sides of the roads, actually also eased some of the traffic congestions because it made the commercial drivers not to just enter the road at will, but they will have to enter those spaces that have been created for them to either pick up people or offload people at a particular point and also come out at a particular point.
All right.
So it also eased some of the traffic congestion.
Numo, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Numo Blafo is a PRO of the Accra Metropolitan Assembly. And this text message here from Ajobig says, please let the Deputy Information and Media Relations Minister know that there are journalists who have expert knowledge on critical areas of national development like the economy, legal planning, science and technology, education, to mention just a few. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Roxanne Wood controlled the sounds, and my producers were Christopher Siedu, Bright Agama, John Poby, and Celestina V. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely night.